Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and I want to welcome everybody to Scary Cast Tuesday. This is just too much Scary Cast to go on one night on Monday night, so we're running Monday and Tuesday, and we're having a lot of fun. First of all, our host from Houston, Texas, who is up here with me this weekend at the Jacksonville Pop Swap and Toy Show, and was with us when we had the Grinch there, the one and only Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
Doing really good. Just let me know. I'm driving right now, so let me know if some weird noises come through.
Okay, we'll let you know. Anyway, glad to have you. And our main man tonight, the guy that is responsible for our wonderful guest and my friend for a long, long time, from Ewing, Virginia, which is up there in the westernmost part of Virginia. It is none other than Matt Delf. How you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing excellent. Doing excellent.
Glad to have you here. And why don't you tell us a little bit about our guest, because he's a friend of yours, and you've been out hunting lots of kinds of stuff with him out in the woods. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, it's Daryl Neese. I'd met him probably, can't remember, it's been several years ago, and he's part of our team that I researched, that part of with Trey and Jessica, and part of ASOG, and he's part of Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization. He's part of North Georgia Cryptids as well, and he's been a good friend and research partner for couple years now. We've been out quite a few times, and he's getting to the point now where he's gone from the transition from he's seeing there's more out there than just the whole Bigfoot thing. He's seeing how it all ties together, which is excellent.
Well, Daryl, this is Dr. John. I guess I would say that you now understand that there's a lot that goes on out there in the woods, isn't there?
Yeah, yes, that's true. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, like Matt said, it started off as going out into the woods and looking for a big furry creature. And once you do it and you get yourself out there and you expose yourself to the things that are out in the woods and you start seeing things that you can't explain, you know, when the improbable is the only answer, then maybe that is the answer. So, you know, you start seeing links between primate research or Bigfoot research and paranormal research or ghost research and then extraterrestrial research. And you start seeing how all these things are kind of tied together. You know, very, very rarely do you have one of these things occur in an area that you don't have the other occur, or at least or maybe all three of them occur. So, you know, once you start making the correlations and making the relationships, then you understand that there's probably more to this than what people originally set out to find.
I will agree with you 100%. Yes, Matt?
Okay. I was going to say, that's where always, you know, how I preach, where you get your most stuff is the boots on the ground research. And he's definitely a boots on the ground researcher. And that's where I think you get a lot of answers, well, more questions than anything, but you get to experience more when your boots on the ground.
Oh, that's for sure. You know, I started off doing this back in, well, I guess I got my start back when I was 6 years old, 1976. I mean, I'm sure you guys probably remember a show called The $6 Million Man. Well, there was an episode where the $6 Million Man fought Bigfoot, and I just thought that was the most amazing thing. And then, you know, around about that time in the late 70s, you start seeing more and more footage on you know, the TV shows with Leonard Nimoy, the In Search Of and that kind of stuff. And you get, you know, I got my first exposure to the Patterson-Gimlin film. And then that kind of interested me a good bit. So, you know, I've always thought that Bigfoot was a probability, even as a young child. And then as I got older, I guess probably the early 90s, I was riding down a back road on the way home. And something crossed the road in front of me, and I was in the area of a horse farm. So I thought I had just, you know, passed a horse that had gotten out of the pasture, and I was going to turn around and go back and let the folks know that they had a horse that got out of their fence. And as I passed by, I'm like, well, I don't believe that was a horse. I mean, a horse doesn't have head and shoulders. You know, they have a head and a neck. They don't have head and shoulders, and that was head and shoulders I saw. So I turned around and went back to see if I could see it again. And I'm telling you, Bigfoot was the furthest thing in from my mind. I had no clue. Wasn't thinking about Bigfoot, hadn't thought about Bigfoot in years. But when I went back and saw the area where I had saw this thing, it was down a little ditch off the side of the road. And for me to be able to see it, gosh, it would have had to been 9 or 10 feet tall. So I kind of scratched my head. I'm like, well, shoot, you know, that was weird. Maybe I just saw a Bigfoot, and I just kind of blew it off and went on about my business. Well, a few years later, I start actually riding around with my brother-in-law in the evenings and on the weekends. We'd go out on the dirt roads and quote, Bigfoot hunt. And basically what we were doing is just going dirt road riding and getting a chance to hang out together, you know, away from the ladies, just, you know, having some guy time. And we're out one night and looking across a clear cut that maybe had been cut 2 or 3 months. And I see a set of red eyes. And these red eyes are probably 10 feet off the ground. And I asked my brother-in-law, I said, do you see that? He said, yes, I do. I'm like, what in the world in the woods has red eyes that would be that high off the ground? So I don't know that that was a Bigfoot, but I don't know what else it could have been. Well, flash forward a few more years, and then I meet some folks from a group called Georgia Bigfoot Research and Investigation. And I joined that group. And through joining that group, I met my friend and mentor, Bob Grumpy Wilson. And Bob and I have probably been in the woods thousands of hours since then. But it turns out this area that I was having all this activity in is actually a place called the Troop Herd Corridor, or the THC. And if you get a chance, do an internet search on it. It's a pretty amazing place. It's got a pretty rich history of paranormal, cryptid, ghost, Bigfoot reports that go all the way back into the 1800s. Well, the one that I saw in the early 90s, and then the set of red eyes I saw, and then where Bob and I was doing most of our initial research is all in the Troop Herd Corridor. And we've had a lot of really strange things happen there. So
now, Daryl, I got a quick question for you. If you could just tell me briefly where this corridor is located, like north of Atlanta, west of Atlanta, just so that I can get an idea in my head.
It is actually, it starts in Alabama and kind of comes across Georgia between Troop County and Herd County. Herd County is situated just south of Carroll County, and Troop County is situated just north of Muskogee and Harris County. So it's right on the Alabama line.
Okay.
And
I hate to tell you this. I don't know where those are, but I know where Rome, Georgia is, and I know where Atlanta is.
Okay. Well, it's about halfway between Atlanta and Columbus. If you look at a map of Georgia, if you look at a map of Georgia, go down 85. 185 cuts off of 85. It's right in that area right there, and it extends all the way down into central Georgia down into the Jackson County area, or Jackson, Georgia area, down into to Flovilla and places like that, down toward Macon and Millersville. So it kind of swoops across the state. And this it's an area that has...
No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Yes, sir. But Bob and I, like I said, Bob and I have been researching together, golly, since 2008. So I guess that makes it, what, 14, 15 years, something like that. And with Bob, I had my first encounter that kind of made Bigfoot go from a belief to something that, you know what, these things really are real. We were in the troop herd corridor in just off the banks of the Chattahoochee River. And we parked and walked maybe 4 or 5 miles down into the woods. And we'd been following some, we'd been in the area a little earlier, and we saw some tree breaks and some unexplained wood structures and stuff like that. And it was about 2 minutes after midnight. And we situated ourselves just off the river. And we were actually in that area because we were following up on the report. There had been a couple of guys that were floating down the river in at nighttime fishing, just doing some float fishing. And there had been some rocks thrown at them from the bank. And these guys kind of got a little upset, like, you know, good rednecks do, because that's how we are. So they hollered back to the woods, you know, why don't you come out and show yourself, and we'll pull over to the bank and handle this. Well, they did that, and a really big rock, they said about half the size of a hood of a Volkswagen, come out of the woods and hit right behind their boat. So they started up their boat and left. So we go to check this area, and we're as best we can tell, we were near the area where it happened. And like I said, it was a few minutes after midnight. Bob sets down facing away from the river. I sat down with the river to my right, so we kind of can watch each other's back. And as we're sitting there, the lights, our headlamps have been off maybe 2 minutes, and I hear a whistle. But the weird thing about the whistle is before I heard the whistle, I actually heard the air come out. And it, I mean, good gracious, it makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up every time I tell this story. It was right behind me. I mean, for me to hear the air before I heard the whistle, right behind me, I literally thought my head was just going to get slapped off my shoulders. And I didn't know what to do. I had a pistol on my side. I leaned up in the chair, grabbed a pistol. I said, Bob, what do I need to do? And he said, just be quiet. So Bob whistles, and this thing whistles, and Bob whistles, and this thing whistles, and Bob whistles again. And after the third whistle, I mean, this thing is – it feels like it literally feels like it's breathing down my neck. That's how close I feel like it is, because it's just right behind me. And after he whistles like the third or fourth time, about 10 or 15 feet, maybe 20 feet in front of us, there's the deepest, golly, it was just a real bassful, really guttural growl. And when it cut loose, I felt it and heard it. And it really shook me up, because I'm like, oh, my God, there's two of them. I'm going to be Bigfoot tomorrow, and nobody even knows where I'm at. So that was where Bigfoot became real to me. And since then, I've had some really, really interesting encounters. But that's how I got my start. And like I said, at first we were out looking for a flesh and blood creature. And then, you know, I've been up to North Carolina, into a national forest up there. And that's where the Bigfoot thing kind of took a turn for me. That's where it kind of went from being just a flesh and blood creature to maybe there's something else to this. We're up there in the national forest, and we're doing some research. And have you guys ever seen orbs? You ever seen an orb in the woods?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, to me, an orb was always just somebody's way of coming back camp not being skunked. Well, did you see anything? No, I didn't see anything, but I saw some orbs. I'm like, yeah, okay, you saw some orbs. You didn't see nothing. Because to me, orbs weren't real. It was just something people made up. Well, we're in a national forest in North Carolina researching with some good friends up there that have a research group up there. And we just left out of camp, and there's orbs. Myself and Bob and Kristen and Dave. And we're walking down a pretty well-lit, as far as not well-lit, but a really wide, nice, passable forest service road. Now, this was a cloudy night. There were no stars. The moon wasn't out. But there was enough ambient light to be able to pick up the roadway because the roadway had gravel on it, so it was bright enough to pick up ambient light so that you could see down the roadway. So we're walking down this roadway, and Dave hangs back a couple hundred yards. He's got a thermal imager, and he tells us to move on up forward, and he's going to kind of scan the woods behind us to see what he sees. So Bob and Kristen and I are a couple hundred yards ahead of him, and Dave calls on the radio and says, "Hey, y'all, hold up. I got lights in the woods." Well, I'm thinking, well, yeah, man, you got lights in the woods. We just left camp. Sure you do. So we stop and we talk a little bit, and he goes back over the radio and he says, "Hey, y'all, I'm coming to you. I'm a little spooked." So I'm like, wow, he's spooked over light. That don't make much sense to me. But so I radioed back to him, "Hold your location," and I could look down the road and see him. I could see his silhouette standing in the road. So I start walking back toward him, mumbling under my breath. Man, I thought this guy was a serious researcher, and here he is worried about a light. So I'm walking back to him, kind of frustrated, and I look in the woods, and I'm thinking to myself, there's a light. So I'm going back to him, and I'm like, holy cow, there is a light in the woods. So by the time I get to him, it's obvious to me that there is a light in the woods for real. We look through his thermal imager. There's nothing visible on the thermal imager. And he had a really nice thermal imager, but there was nothing visible. You could see it with your naked eye, but you couldn't see it through the thermal imager. So as we're sitting there staring at it, I'm looking over his left shoulder, and one orb turns to two orbs right in front of me. And I start tapping him on the shoulder, and I bet I said, holy crap, 50 times. Because, I mean, it's one of those that it became real to me right then, right there. My whole reality changed. Well, those two orbs turned to three orbs, and then three orbs turned to four. So there were three orbs in the shape of a triangle and one orb circling them. And
all right, now hold on. This is Dr. John. I got a question. How far away were you guys from those orbs? About how many feet?
Initially, we were probably – I'm going to say 30 yards, and they were probably about 15 feet in the air. Because when I first saw the light, I'm thinking to myself, okay, am I looking at a star? No, it's not a star. It's completely cloudy. Am I looking at camp? No, it's straight ahead. Camp's to my left. Am I looking at somebody with a headlamp? No, this thing is 15 feet off the ground, and it's not moving. It's being dead still. So I went through a process of elimination to rule out what it wasn't. So this thing,
okay,
like
now,
I said, they're about...
Now, another question I have about the orbs, what was the general color of them, and could you see anything kind of like in the middle of them, or were they kind of...
No, these were solid, more white than yellow, but had a yellow tint to them. And like I said, at first there was one, then it split to two. Then it split to three in the shape of a triangle. Then it split to four, which was the three in the triangle and the one circling it. So the fourth one was circling the three in the triangle. And then they all went back into one light and started floating directly toward us, as smooth as it, and no, you know, not bobbing, not weaving, just moving very slowly straight toward us. And they probably got to within, I'm going to say 20 yards, and Bob turned his headlamp on and stepped into the woods, and the second he made that move, they went away. Now, Kristen was trying to record this stuff on her equipment. She couldn't record it on her phone. She couldn't record it on her camera. And as best I can remember, It either fried her camera or fried her recorder. One of her pieces of equipment with that she was trying to record this thing on just completely short-circuited. And she actually sent it back to the manufacturer, and they sent her a letter back and said, we've never seen anything like this happen to our equipment. Maybe we had a malfunction. We'll send you another one. We also had EMF meters on us, and they pegged out. So at this one moment in time, orbs became real, and then I realized, you know what, maybe there's more to Bigfoot than just a flesh and blood creature.
Okay,
so,
now I want to. Now I tell you what, I want to jump in here with a comment. Robin McRae Haynes. Does the name Robin McRae ring a bell to you?
No, sir.
Okay, she's a very good friend of mine. She's a friend of Matt's, and she is a kind of a world experiencer on Bigfoot. I don't want to say world expert because no one's an expert, but she is
right.
A very Matt, would you say she's a very sophisticated Bigfoot friend?
Yeah, she's got something going on there for sure.
She got something going on. I can't wait to tell her what you said tomorrow. That's going to be great. But anyway, we interviewed, and I will leave the name out of this. We interviewed someone who does a lot of research and says, Bigfoot is only flesh and blood, and they have never seen any evidence of any paranormal anything. And under my breath, I said, well, have you ever been in the woods? But I didn't say that. And Matt might
right.
know who I'm talking about. We will not mention that. But I think it is preposterous to not see evidence of strangeness when you actually encounter or come into the Bigfoot world. Now, Matt, do you agree with that?
Yeah, people they get their mindset. I don't know how they come up with it. Obviously, the way I see it is they don't do that much in the field research, and not enough yet anyhow. They're not at that point yet where they start coming up to where they're tracking something and the tracks stop or they're seeing the strange lights. So that tells me a lot about experience of somebody that's out in the woods, is that they claim, oh, this is this and this, and you can't, you know. The only way you're going to get the experience of different stuff is being out there as much as possible. So a lot of that
and
experience or just cover up.
And I'll make a statement, or all you have to do is go to the mountains of northeast Georgia in Rabun County with me to a particular spot that I have. And you better be careful. You better get ready to be scared, because I'm gonna tell you what, they will come out at night, and now they do, and that's the way it is. And my most terrifying story—it's chronicled in my book, Look Up in the Sky. And Daryl, I need to get you. I'd love to get you a copy of that. If you would, at the end of the show, I'd do a quick call around. If you'd get me your snail mail address, and I'll mail you a copy of it. You can see some of the experiences that I have had, and that is the most frightened I have ever been, and I'm surprised that I made it through it and didn't leave this earth. I mean, it was so frightening. I mean, I had this thing come. I'm in a little old flimsy cabin, way up in the mountains of North Georgia, and I hear this thing come walking around the corner. And walking toward that front door. And that front door is something that a four-year-old could push over. And it thing stopped. And I didn't know what to do. So I poured me a double vodka, cut the light off, and sat there, woke up at 3 o'clock. And it was about 11 at night. And that was terrifying.
Here's the thing about Bigfoot research, and people ask me if I'm scared to do it. Not at all. And maybe it's, I mean, I was a firefighter paramedic for 25 years, so maybe most of my common sense has left me anyway. But if you're out in the woods and you're looking for, and I use that term very loosely, and it wants you, it's got you. And there ain't nothing you can do about it. I mean, the only reason any of us have ever been able to go out and do this and come back and tell the tale is because it didn't want us. If it wanted us, we would have got, and that's the end of it. So,
I mean, you know, I'm going to say this, when you're 5 feet away from a Bigfoot and there is no noise, there are no crickets chirping in the woods, and you have just heard one take a step and it is right in front of the door of your cabin, you realize that, well, if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. And if it's not,
absolutely,
it's not.
Yep. You know, that and, if you're in a tent and it comes after you, or if you're just walking through the woods, because, I mean, these, you know, everybody that's seen these things, it's usually like, holy cow, there they are. They slipped up on you and you had no idea they were there. You know, and, you know, like Matt said, and I've actually experienced this twice. I'm a train tracker, and I'm not great at it, but I think I'm pretty decent.
Right.
For you to be following a track line and it just disappear for no reason. I mean, not that the substrate changed. I mean, you're following a track line through sand on the banks of a creek, or you're following a track line through the woods and it just disappear. I mean, just go away. Or even stranger than that, following it out through the middle of a wheatgrass field, and there's no stop, there's no start, there's no stop, or no lead into or lead out of it. Just starts and stops in the middle of the field. I mean, you're walking along, and the track line starts, and then you follow it. I mean, a blind person could follow it because it walked through wheat straw, and you follow it about 150 yards, and then it just goes away, and there's no tracks leading into it, and no tracks leading away from it. These things are pretty fascinating, and the more you get out there, and the more you expose yourself to it, the more you're going to realize that maybe there is something else to this thing, and that's all I can encourage people to do. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. I'm not trying to prove Bigfoot exists. I'm out there to try to prove to myself that what I think or what my opinion is. It's either right or wrong. And I have a good time doing it. And I'm out in the woods with a lot of like-minded people. And if we go out in the woods, much like we did this past weekend, we didn't have nothing notable happen. But I got to spend a couple of days in the woods with some really good friends. And it was well worth it.
Well, that sounds great. Kyler, I tell you what, do you have any questions or comments you'd like to ask right now?
Not at the moment, no. This is really cool that you get to, or you've gotten to experience all this. I want to go out and do it myself.
Well I tell you, with the orbs, to expand on that, the last time we went out into the Troop Herd Corridor, and actually Matt was with us, we had a couple of field teams deploy. Team one kind of walked down a path through the woods. Team two walked down that path for a while and then kind of cut off into the woods, just parallel to the main path that we were on. So team one's mission was to walk down this pathway just like we were normal hikers, just talking and carrying on and not trying to be quiet, not trying to be sneaky or anything, just walk like we were walking in the woods, just for the heck of it. Go to a certain point, hang out at that certain point for a while, talk, carry on, cut up, you know, just socialize, then turn around and walk back with the hope that something would parallel us on the way back and inadvertently come into the other team that was set up in a stationary position in the woods. Well, that's exactly what happened. I mean, we tricked them pretty good that night. Team one walked down the road, hung out for a while, walked back. Team two was at a observation post, listening post, set up in the woods. As team one was heading back down the woods, team one was myself and Matt. We heard a tree get pushed over. And
right,
we could hear, we could hear something paralleling us. So we radioed ahead to Team 2, trying to let them know that, hey, something for sure is coming. They couldn't hear us. But the base camp, which was probably a half mile on the other side of them, could. So there was some radio interference there that shouldn't have happened. I mean,
well, my goodness. I mean, can you imagine, Daryl, if it was radio interference specifically? We all were. It's unreal, isn't it?
I mean, it is what it is.
You spoke to laugh. That was a joke.
And that doesn't happen with a flesh and blood creature. It just doesn't. So, I mean, I've been deer hunting all my life, and I've never had a deer. I've never had a duck. I've never had a dove. I've never had a squirrel. I've never had a pheasant. I've never had a hog. I've never had a turkey mess up my electronics, ever.
Oh, you haven't?
But it happens.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it happens when you go out with Bigfoot. It messes up. I mean, almost without fail, every time that we have an encounter, something electronic messes up.
I'm getting too animated, and I'm enjoying this too much. But I was gonna say this. Don't you think that Bigfoot knew what y'all were trying to do? I mean, give the old man credit.
Here's the thing, and this is something that Bob and I have tested once before. We think that they absolutely knew we were there, okay? But I'm not sure that they count. Maybe they do, and maybe we've just been lucky. But what we've done is we've traveled in a group before and maybe have a couple fall off, and the majority of the group keep moving forward. And our theory is that they don't realize if it's five people walking or three people walking, they just see a group of people walking. Now, and that could be wrong, and I do think they're far more intelligent than we care to believe. But that night, for whatever reason, when we walked in those woods, when all five of us walked into the woods, they started calling. I mean, you could hear them calling, you could hear them whistling, you could hear them echoing, knocking, doing whatever you want to call it, to our right. So they tracked us in. Team 2 kind of slid off into the woods. Team 1 kept traveling down the road, talking and carrying on, trying to keep their attention. And I think it worked. Because on the way back, as they were trailing us back toward Team 2, Team 2 could see, they could hear them coming. They could hear twigs breaking, but they didn't pick up anything on the thermal imagers. But what they did end up seeing was orbs. And those orbs came toward their direction and then circled around their direction, got behind them, and continued on up the road, tracking us. Well, Team 1 went up the road and dipped into the woods, and then Team 2 came out and traveled down the road back toward base camp so that hopefully they would track Team 2 down the road and come up on Team 1, and that's exactly what they did. Myself and Matt and one other individual were set up at a fixed location, and as Team 2 passed by us heading back to base camp, we saw the lights. We saw the orbs coming right up to us. Now, am I drawing a conclusion? Yes, I am. But I think it's an educated conclusion based off past experiences. Okay, so can I say for 100% certainty that Bigfoot is more than a flesh and blood creature? No. Can I say with 99% certainty that Bigfoot's more than a flesh and blood creature? Yes, I can. I'd bet my life on it, but I wouldn't bet my kid's life on it.
Man, that's a great comment. It really is.
There is more to this than just the flesh and blood creature. Now, you know, when people say that that's not real, well, how do you know it's not real? Well, I haven't seen it. Well, maybe you just didn't know what you were looking for, or maybe you haven't exposed yourself to it enough. Now, here's the thing. I could tell you that surrounding everybody on this planet right now are these magical waves, okay? And they're they're out there, and all you got to do is have the ability to pick it up. And you might tell me I'm nuts until you turn on the radio. And then you realize, hey, there are ways out here above me. I just wasn't tuned into it. You know, I didn't have the right mindset or I didn't have the right equipment to pick up what was there because I didn't either, number one, didn't know it existed, or number two, didn't believe it existed, or number three, wasn't tuned into it. So if you go out into the woods and your situational awareness is not where it should be, you're going to miss things. There are going to be things that happen right in front of you that you just – One of the parts of the tracking class we took was hiding in plain sight. And this was actually done. You can go out and you can get somebody so focused on tracking and so focused on following tracks that you could sit down right in the middle of the daggum trail just off the trail a little bit, and they will walk right past you because they're focused on the tracks and not looking at their surroundings. Well, Bigfoot research is no different. If you go out looking for a monkey and you don't see a monkey, then you're going to think you failed. But if you go out into the woods looking for an experience, whatever that experience may be, you're probably going to encounter something. And I don't necessarily mean something supernatural or whatever. You may see an animal that you wouldn't have ordinarily seen. Or you may see a sound that you wouldn't have ordinarily seen or heard. Or you may see something beautiful that God put on this earth for you to look at, and that you would have ordinarily missed because you were so focused on trying to see one little bitty thing. So, you know, once you start doing this, and once you get out into the woods, and like Matt said, and this is not bragging at all, I'm blessed to be able to say this. I've probably got literally thousands of hours in the woods over the last 14 years, and I wouldn't trade one second of it. Because it has opened my eyes to things that I didn't believe existed. I mean, it's just eye-opening. And if anybody's listening who doesn't understand what I'm talking about, go out into the woods. Go find you a spot in the national forest and just sit down. You may not see Bigfoot, but I promise you you're going to see something that will make you smile. It's worth it.
All right, that's a great statement. It really is. Matt, do you have any questions for Daryl?
I was gonna let the people know that Bob that he's talking about, Bob Wilson, they call him Grumpy. He's definitely, you know me, there's not a whole lot of people that I look to for Bigfoot advice or anything like that. I've been in this game since 1996, but Bob is definitely one of the ones that I go to. He's and for him to be out with Daryl is he's with great company there. Bob, for the people that's not familiar with Bob Wilson, he was a former veteran, former police officer. He's done search and rescue. He's done just about everything, and he's older, but he's been doing this stuff since, I can't remember. Do you know, Daryl, how long he's been doing this?
He got into it in the 70s in law enforcement.
Okay.
You know, he used to work out in California, and they would have, their policy was that if somebody come in and reported a Bigfoot sighting, that they had to go out and actually follow up on it. You know, that was just their policy. And they had a family come in to the sheriff's office and make a report that they had saw something. And I think this is maybe before it was real to Bob. So he was out, you know, following up on the report, and there it was, you know. He shines his flashlight down a path, and he sees something that he's not supposed to see. You know, he sees something that's not real. And that moment was an epiphanous moment for him. Something that he believed was real, now he knows is real. So,
and, yeah, he's a great mentor. He's, like I said, he's one that I look up to. And he's experienced a lot of it. If a lot of people, if you've ever seen that show, they changed the name of it because it was Killing Bigfoot. TV series that was on. It was called Killing Bigfoot, but they changed it because they didn't like the name of that. He was a part of that show. Yeah, now it's Bigfoot is Real, I believe, on the Travel Channel or whatever. But he's so knowledgeable, and he's experienced a lot. And he's definitely one that I look to a lot of times whenever I have stuff. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? Or he's definitely he's a great mentor and great person, great friend. And Daryl was in good hands working with him, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like I was trained by the best. I really do. I mean, and I say that in all honesty. I mean, not only is he a good Bigfoot mentor, but like I said, he's a great American. He served our country both in the military and in public safety, so he's somebody to look up to.
To
carry on the weirdness part of this, the correlation between Bigfoot and other things, I'm sure you guys have heard of the Meadow Project. Our good friend and fellow researcher, Trey Hudson, wrote a book called The Meadow Project, Explorations into the South Skinwalker Ranch. If you guys haven't read that book, I encourage you to do so. It is mind-boggling. And I'm telling you, had I not, I can, other than the chapter of that book that is based on the history of the area, everything else in that book is 100% real because I was there. Now, obviously, I wasn't there when he's talking about something that happened in the 1920s and 30s. Excuse me. But the experiences that he writes about, they're 100% real. I mean, it happened. And I know when you read it, you're going to think, these people were high as a kite. I promise you, we weren't. It is, I'm not trying to make a dollar off that book. I have nothing to gain by saying what I'm saying about it. All I'm telling you is, every single thing in that book is 100% fact. It is, and that book does a really good job of going really in-depth into how the correlation between Bigfoot and ET and paranormal kind of all ties together. And if you haven't read it, I strongly urge you to read it. It's a fascinating book.
And the best part about that is we document everything, and we have video footage and everything that they've experienced out there pretty much, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the things that we learned through doing research at the Meadow is we learned just how vulnerable we are and just how maybe unprepared we are, because there are things that have happened that because we weren't prepared to capture, we missed. There were times when we were out and probably put ourselves in harm's way and didn't really mean to do that. So because of the things that happened in the Meadow, we have developed protocols and guidelines and verification procedures as far as, you know, radio logs and who's on what team and where you at in doing personal accountability reports, or what we call PARs, in the fire service. You know, everybody's got the amount, everybody has equipment on them that if they were to get completely separated, they could survive at least a day or two. They have a way to communicate. They have a way to document. We all carry recorders. We all carry flashlights. We all carry thermal imagers. Some of us carry EMFs. Some people are carrying Geiger counters. People are carrying thermometers. And all these things, the equipment list that we carry is an equipment list that was, well, gosh, we wish we would have had this so the next time we take it. So we learned a lot by a trial and error. You know, the best teacher is failure. And we failed a whole bunch. There are things that I wish we would have captured that we didn't capture because we weren't prepared. So you know, through collaboration with people like Matt, people like Bob, people like Trey, and people like the guys that we research with out of North Carolina, David and Dave, we've come up with a really solid list of equipment. You know, Kristen has always been great with having the coolest, neatest equipment. And then you take the other side of it, and you talk about Miss Jessica, who is a remote viewer. You know, someone who's able to tap into that energy in the universe. And then we have a nuclear engineer on our team. You know, we had a guy that had a master's degree in physics. We've got some really, really smart people, some really well-educated people, some really, really well-rounded people. And through our years of experience in the field, we've developed protocols that have helped us do exactly what Matt was just talking about. Is we can tell you, if you read the book, if there's a story that's being told, there's a picture or a video or documentation to back it up. So it's not just me telling the story. It's me telling the story and go, look, I can show you the picture of what happened. So if you do research, or if anybody's watching, or excuse me, anybody listening who does do Bigfoot research, be sure you document anything that happens. Learn from our mistakes. Be sure you have the ability to document anything that happens so that it's not just your word when you tell the story. It's your word backed up by evidence.
It's also great for, like, you can go back and look on our notes, and you'll catch stuff that we didn't realize when we was out in the field or we recorded or seen. You might hear a different noise that we didn't hear by our ear. The whole video of the you couldn't see with our own visible eyes, like when the portal opened. They had the portal, but you can see in the video, you can actually see the portal through the recording. So you catch stuff a lot of times, too, that you may not have caught when you were there experiencing it. So you go back and review. And, I mean, it's great. Just gathering data, basically.
Yeah, we had that happen one time on a paranormal investigation. We were doing a pre-investigation interview with the person who owned the home just to be sure that we had documentation of her saying that it was okay to research in the home and that we weren't going to share her location or anything like that. So it's all on tape so that it's recorded. We went back and listened to that recording, and you actually hear the little girl ghost that we're there looking for talking in the tape, and you could not hear it. I mean, we were outside setting up the equipment, getting ready to go do the investigation. And when we replayed it to be sure the video was good for legal reasons, you hear the little girl ghost talk on the tape. So, yeah, you're right. Being able to have the equipment to record stuff that you miss with your eyes or you miss with your ears, that can be invaluable sometimes.
You know what? I got to stop you. I got to tell you a story, a quick story. I run Comic Cons and festivals, and we did one in Somerville, South Carolina, which is a suburb of Charleston, and we decided to do a scary cast. And we had Dr. Trey Donaway, we had Robin McRae, we had Maestro, we had me, and one other person. And we sat there and we discussed the first lady hanged in South Carolina, who was Lavinia Fisher. I don't know, has anybody on here ever heard of Lavinia Fisher?
I have not.
She's incredibly famous down here in Charleston, okay? So all of a sudden, you know, so we're recording this, and this thing is going out live on air on a Saturday afternoon. We're sitting about, now, by the way, who is what is the voice that is talking that's trying to interrupt me? Can you gentlemen hear that?
I cannot.
Oh, you can't? Oh, yeah, I'm hearing, there's voice talking to me.
No. I hear
well,
something,
I can hear
but I can't. I can't make out what it is.
Anyway, maybe it's Lavinia. But what happened is, so we are, they are talking about Lavinia Fisher in history, and I ask a question, but we get an answer through the speakers, and it's on tape. I mean, we are actually in the presence of the ghost of Lavinia Fisher doing a scary cat. And right now, there's something trying to talk to me in the middle of this podcast, and I'm really glad that my cousin West Virginia's here. We used to get really creepy doing scary casts by myself here. I'll tell you what, it just gets real, real weird sometimes, especially when we start doing all this stuff. So anyway, I just want to say this is not for children. You better be careful what you do, and be sure to have somebody around you so that in case something weird happens, you don't get too scared. But anyway, and whoever's on Scarycast, whoever's joined the four of us, we're nice guys, and we're just exploring the paranormal.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, when I first got into this, before I actually met Bob, I took my daughter Brianna and my daughter Jacqueline and my son Joseph. You know, I was a Bigfoot hunter now. I was part of a Bigfoot research team. Boy, I was cool like you wouldn't believe. I took them to an area, went down into the woods, had two wooden bats, knocked them together thinking, you know, I'm just going to look real cool. Well, I knocked, and I got a response, and it scared the dickens out of me because I didn't know. I'm like, oh, my God, what do I do now? So, I mean, and we're in a Jeep with no windows, no doors. We're out in the middle of the woods. So we drive up a little bit away from that area. I'm like, hey, y'all, let's go back up a little bit because I'm trying to get away from where I just heard this knock so that I don't let the fear show. And then we pull up and park, and we're sitting there, and I'm like, all right, y'all, be real quiet. Let's see if we hear anything. And my youngest daughter, who is my little child, Brianna, leans up. She said, Daddy, something's walking around the Jeep. And I'm like, you're right, it is. So, you know, I was like, time for us to go, and we loaded up and took off. So I say that to say this. Don't be stupid like I was and put your kids in harm's way. That was the dumbest thing ever because I thought it was a joke. I wasn't real sure that Bigfoot was real, but I was going to go out and do this Bigfoot hunting thing. And there I was out in the middle of the woods with no way to defend myself or my kids. So that's a great point, Dr. John.
And now that I've started talking again, the interference or the voice is back. But when you were talking, none of that was present. So somebody's trying to get my attention. So you better keep talking now. You and Matt and
well,
Kyle
good.
Better keep talking.
Yeah, I'm going to note one thing we do an SD session also out there. Daryl, you've done it plenty of times, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
If you want to explain, kind of tell them a little bit about what your experience with that and
well,
in the area, what it is.
Okay. The SD session, if you're not familiar with it, it's a way to try to communicate with something, whatever that something may be, okay? Some people may call it a ghost. Some people may call it ET. Some people may call it energy, whatever. What you're doing is you're basically using a ghost box, for lack of a better term, to communicate. But the difference between this and just using the regular ghost box is that the receiver has on a blindfold, has noise-canceling earbuds, and has a head earmuffs over that. So the receiver has no idea what questions are being asked and can't see. So you're basically just sitting there listening to the ghost box scan through. And your job is just to repeat what you hear the ghost box say. So the questioner just starts asking questions. And the receiver has no idea when the questions are being asked, when they started, when they stopped, anything. You're just sitting there, you get your earbuds in, you get your headphones on, you get your blindfold on, and when you're ready, you raise your hand. And then the questioner will start asking questions. And then your job as the receiver is just to repeat what you hear come to the ghost box. Now, we've done that a couple of times and had some pretty, pretty awesome, awesome sessions. And if you'd like to see hear about those, get the book because Trey has a word-for-word transcript of it. And I think if you go and see Trey do one of his presentations, he actually has the ST sessions that he will play, and you can see it in real time. It is really, really impressive.
Now, weren't really you the one that the receiver or the messenger whenever for the Meadow Project after the?
I was. It was.
Okay.
I mean, speaking
gentlemen, I'm going to have to interrupt you, and I'm going to have to ask whatever is interrupting our transmission. It does it when I talk or when Matt talks, but Daryl, when you talk, it is silent. So I'm going to have to ask politely, if whoever is interrupting Matt Delph and I on this broadcast, please stop. Please stop. We need to finish this broadcast. So I'm going to ask politely once, and please stop. And so, Daryl, please continue.
Yeah, if you know, I'm sure Mom and Daddy told you to interrupt people is rude, so cut that out. You can communicate with us once this thing's over with. So, but just hold on for a minute.
I'll talk to you.
Let us finish. Yeah, we'll discuss it later, but It's a really cool thing. If you guys ever get the opportunity to go see Trey Hudson in person, it's well worth it. He's a great guy. You know, he's a pretty amazing fellow. He's been everywhere, but hell, and seen everything but the wind. I mean, he's a pretty amazing guy. He's in military intelligence. He served our country through the military. You know, he's related to public safety. He works at the Chemical Weapons Depot. He's got a degree in psychology. He's got a degree in anthropology. Just pretty amazing fellow. And that's the caliber of people that we have on our team. I mean, we really are blessed to have the people that we have, you know, with Trey and Chris and Jessica and Bob and Matt and Glenn and Dave and David and gosh, I mean,
they're pretty good
things. Yeah, we really do. I mean, if you outside of me, you take me out of the picture, we got pretty much a who's who of paranormal, Bigfoot, cryptid investigators. I mean, we have some pretty amazing people. We really do.
Well, here's what I'm going to do right now. If our guest would please let me talk for just a little bit. We'd like to invite you. Of course, we want to invite Trey to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, which is hopefully going to be this coming spring, this coming April, because we're trying to get everything worked out with the event venues there. They had a change of leadership, and whenever they have a change of leadership, it always messes me up. And I'm used to working with the old folks, and then everybody wants to change everything. They think change is good, and not necessarily. But anyway, we're going to have the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and it's a lot of fun. We have Robin McRae Haynes, Pat, her husband, Pat McRae. We have Dr. Trey Donaway is there. We do a scary cast panel. We have Matt. We have Jessica Jones, and we'd love to have Trey, and we'd love to have you there, Daryl. I mean, it's just going to be a lot of fun, Tyler. You have to fly up to Georgia, if you can, we hope you'll be there with us. But I tell you what, it's a lot of fun. It'll be our 7th annual Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And we'll have Billy Redden, the biggest superstar in Rabun County. Billy Redden played Banjo Boy in the movie Deliverance. I mean, you don't get any bigger than that. And we'll have Sonia Thompson, who's the most famous lady zombie in the world. From The Walking Dead, she was on the cover of Entertainment Magazine at the beginning of season 2. We'll have Kip Ramey, the amazing artist, the amazing folk artist. I mean, we keep having the same crowd, and people just love it. Matt was there. Matt, did you have a good time at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference last time?
Oh, yeah. I always have a blast. I always have a blast at those. I enjoy it.
It's a lot of fun. Jessica, I think Jessica had fun. I think everybody had fun. So we're gonna try to keep doing it again until, as they say, the cows come home. So I guess what we'll do, Daryl, I'll just keep your contact information, and I'll either contact you through Matt if I lose it, because I am famous now. I'm famous for losing stuff. And I'm famous for having paranormal entities interrupt me in the middle of my podcast. And I guess this one's just not going to go away. But that's all right. It's fun. And I can't wait to get this tape to some type of a digital audio processing company to figure out what is going on. But we've got a lady's voice that is just interrupting the heck out of me right now. Matt, can you hear it?
Yeah, I can hear it.
And you notice that when Daryl talks, it doesn't happen.
Right.
So
man,
Daryl,
I can't hear it.
This is crazy. So anyway, just I tell you what we'll do. We'll let Matt and I will each get a question at our guest tonight. And I guess we'll sail off into the sunset till we have you back again. Daryl and I, you're gonna be back on this show. You're very entertaining, and you're very knowledgeable, and we've enjoyed having you for sure. So, all right, Matt, your question comes first for Daryl. What do you want to ask him?
All right. What is your most notable experience that you would say stands out above all the others that so far that you've experienced out in the field?
It's got to be when Bob turned into the ball of energy and shot across the field. And I know you're familiar with that. For those of you who aren't, we were researching in the meadow, and my dear friend Bob Grumpy Wilson that we were just talking about manifested into an orb, basically, and moved at a really, really fast pace across the field from left to right, about 200-300 meters, and turned back into a person. And I know that sounds stupid. I know it sounds weird. I know it sounds like I'm on something, but y'all, another very dear friend of ours who's gone on to heaven, Tim, seen it happen. I was there, and Tim Gillardin. He was standing right beside me. We watched Bob turn from Bob into a ball of light, shoot across the field, and turn back into Bob. And I saw it, and I asked Tim. I said, Tim, what did you just see? And he told me what he saw, and we both saw the same thing. And Bob has zero recollection of it. Bob swears that it didn't happen to him.
Okay, that was my question.
Yeah, Bob, that we were the one that was messed with, we think that Bob was the one that was messed with. If you have not read the book, The Meadow Project, please do. Yeah, that whole story is broke down in that story. I mean, it's broke down in the book. It is an amazing. And I mean, we could talk for an entire hour just about that night. And there was so much weird stuff that happened. But I figured you guys had Trey on before, so I figured you guys had heard those stories before. So I tried to stay away from them. But that was an amazing night.
I'll tell you what, I think all of you were messed with, is what I think.
And that's most likely true, for sure. But
that's what my...
I think in that particular instance, Bob was the patsy.
Well, we'll talk to him. Yeah, you're pretty cool. You were at the first Bigfoot conference. All right, Kyler, you got a question for our guest?
Yeah, real quick. So back, you were mentioning, oh, is it doing that for me too? Wow.
Yes, it is. You can hear it.
All right. So you mentioned a little while back that you can track as much as you want, but as long as you, you know, pay attention to the things around you, you'll see it. So how many times or how often does this happen to you guys when you're so stuck on this one thing and then the other person is paying attention to everything around, and then you'll catch it maybe on the recordings later on, or you'll just, you know, someone else will notice something that the other person wasn't looking for?
Quite frequently, actually. I think what we catch on film or we catch on audio is maybe something that maybe wasn't visible to us, or maybe we weren't able to hear it. Now, there have been a couple of times where we've been filming a certain situation that's happening in front of us and catch something in the background that we didn't know was there because we weren't looking for it. So it's happened probably – oh gosh, I can think of three times that since we've started really doing video tracking and audio recording, there's been three times where something happened and we caught it on video, and it wasn't what we were trying to catch on video. It was very serendipitous. we just happened to be at the right place at the right time to catch it.
Okay. Well, interesting. And all I'm going to say is I want to thank you very much for being on ScaryCast with us tonight. We're going to have you back, and you got an invitation to join the Bigfoot Conference. We'd love to have you. We'll get you more information on that. And I want to say thanks to our hosts, Matt Delph and Kyler Smith, and thanks to the guest Paranormal Voice who has been talking over all of the ScaryCasters. So thanks to all five of us that are here. And especially thanks to you, Daniel. We appreciate it. We'll see everybody next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, on the one, the only, I think it's called ScaryCast, right? Uh-oh, there goes the theme music. Must be time to go.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Say good night. ScaryCast brought to you by the Trans America Corporation. Trans America Life Insurance. We wouldn't be here without it. This is Dr. John Staley saying goodbye. We'll see you next week. ScaryCast.